Hi, I'm Lori Jones, President and CEO of Avasec Communications and host of StrategyCast. Join me and my guests, innovators, disruptors, and visionaries as we explore bold and brave marketing strategies that help you transform, scale, and grow your brand. Today's episode of StrategyCast is all about igniting your company's growth engine. Join me and my guest, Paul Self, founder and CEO of Multiply GTM, as we discuss ways to use data and refine your go-to-market plans and keep conversion rates from taking a nosedive. We talk about the secrets of setting realistic goals and why early market seeding is your best bet for success. And don't forget to check out the most recent issue of the StrategyCast newsletter on strategycast.com. Just like this episode, is full of inspiration and a ton of ideas that will elevate your strategies and marketing know-how.
A competitive edge starts with strategy, and strategy starts with knowing how to develop one. StrategyCast is a leading marketing podcast that serves up strategic insights, trends, and tips to help separate your business from the pack. Tune in weekly as host Lori Jones interviews bold marketing leaders who have priceless wisdom and are willing to share. Each episode explores cutting-edge approaches that have proven instrumental in transforming brands into industry trailblazers.
Welcome to StrategyCast. I am so excited to have Paul Self join the show today. Paul is with Multiply GTM, and we are going to dive into planning for sustainable revenue growth in today's economy. Before we get there, Paul, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thank you very much, Lori. It's great to be here and looking forward to an exciting conversation today. So we'll, I know we'll probably take some tangents, but let's have some fun with it. So spent my better part of my career in the project management space, bringing project management technology to market, think for really big projects, right? I'm building a bridge, infrastructure projects, oil and gas projects. So all around, you know, can I hit this schedule timeframe? Can I deliver this project within these cost parameters? What's it going to actually cost me to get there on time? So a lot of time spent around the planning space and the data that supports that, but always had this itch to be part of the startup world. So I spent the first half of my career in large companies, got to do lots of acquisition type of activity and M&A work, but I always had that itch to go and build something for myself and the team that we would ultimately, you know, bring into the organization. So scratch that itch. This is my second Multiply GTM is my second from a whiteboard startup. I like to say literally a drawing on the whiteboard to bring
congratulations.
Market.
That's awesome.
Thank you. So it's been a great journey. It's been a great journey. But we built the product because it's always been very difficult for us and our own businesses to build plans that actually support a revenue goal and that are tied to the go-to-market activity that's required to actually hit that number. So that's why we created Multiply GTM. So excited to dive into our topic around sustainable revenue growth today.
Well, I love it. And so all companies talk about growth, but you don't hear a lot of leaders talking about sustainable growth. They're probably defining it when they take a look at what they want to achieve year over year over year, but they're really not talking about sustainable growth. Define that for us, if you will.
Yeah. So that's a great question, and it's a great place to start. So I think part of it is we can think about what it's not, right? So we worked in an era for probably the better part of 3 or 4 years, maybe even longer, where it was growth at any cost, right? Where we could spend money, money was inexpensive, capital was inexpensive, and we were able to test and, you know, do things that we would not normally do under normal circumstances with constraints that most organizations are now faced with to try and grow the business. So sustainable revenue growth is all about, can I build a path to profitability for the company? Or at minimum, do I have an efficient means of growing the company with the resources, money, headcount that I have today? So that's what we mean by sustainable revenue growth.
And is it different for a company that is quote unquote scaling in order to get to a growth period where they can really call it growth? Or is it one and the same?
It The profile will absolutely be different, right? So, but the concept of sustainable revenue growth is one and the same. So if you're an early stage, a much earlier stage company, let's say you're at the seed round or maybe just getting into kind of Series A, that path to profitability may be further out. So it may take a little bit longer than the, you know, than your Series B, Series C that may already have achieved profitability or have a, you know, shorter term path to actually hitting profitability. So, but the reality is it's still driven by efficiency, right? You have to have a clear path to how am I going to grow and scale this business and in a way that makes the best use of my resources versus knowing that for too long, right? It's always about the next round of funding, right? You get your seed round of funding and you burn through that, right? And it's about your Series A and then your Series B. And it's that has shifted a bit as we move into, you know, certainly in 2023, and will shift, I think, even more significantly as we move into 2024.
You know, it's interesting. We're talking about revenue, sustainability, growth, you know, all that. And there has been a real shift in marketing leadership roles over the last many years, where CROs actually have the marketing title along with it, or at least maybe a VP of marketing reporting to the CRO along with sales. Why is that happening? Why isn't marketing as in control of the spend, the mindset behind the growth as they were previously?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. So I think we still see a pretty heavy mix out there in the marketplace where you may have a CRO role, but there's absolutely still a very strong CMO, even if they roll into the CRO, but they sit essentially as a peer. Like, and even so, one of our largest customers that we work with, there is a chief sales officer and a chief marketing officer, and they are peers within the organization and drive decisions together, and they have a great working relationship. So it's an interesting question. I do think, you know, tactically rolling that responsibility up to a single individual that has, you know, ownership of both the supply from marketing and the demand that's required by sales is kind of the thought process behind why some organizations are doing that, so that there's a single throat to choke, so to speak, for go-to-market and driving revenue and hopefully driving more alignment between those teams if they have a common leader. I think those are the reasons why we're seeing some of it. But in the organizations that we work with that are most successful, that marketing leadership role is just as important as the sales leadership role or the CRO.
I'm really glad to hear that. I mean, what we're talking about is the leadership behind it, right? Whether the title really doesn't matter. What matters is understanding the audience, what it is, you know, what the value is of the customer, what are the metrics that we're going to be able to deploy to measure the effectiveness or efficiency of everything that we're working on.
Absolutely. So sales leadership and marketing leadership, right? You have to understand your unit economics, right? And that's what I think earns you the seat at the table is shifting that conversation from, you know, just purely around, you know, ICP campaigns, marketing programs and tactics, the go-to-market motions that we're going to use, to truly understanding what that means from a unit economics perspective. And by that, I mean, like, how much does it cost to actually acquire a customer, retain that customer, expand that customer, and your programs that roll into that versus the value that that customer is going to bring to the table.
Right. So. And so knowing that these leaders are their ROI is completely measured by the revenue growth that they're achieving, what advice do you have for our listeners today on the things that they should be looking at from a measurability standpoint, or at least those items that we know they can hit their revenue goal by, to set the entire, you know, all those teams, sales and marketing, up to succeed?
Yes. And it's a crazy environment that we're working with, right? And you're absolutely right. Revenue leaders are ultimately measured on their ability to hit a revenue goal. Did we, right, you know, grow the business in the way that we said we would? But in today's environment, 100% of the revenue leaders we talk to have at best a 50% degree of confidence in actually achieving their revenue goal. And that's a tough spot to be in. You combine that with things like 69% of reps last year didn't hit their number, right? Conversion rates are going down. Sales cycles are extending. you have more buyers in your buying committee. Like, these are all, it's like the sky is falling, right? All of these challenges that these teams are faced with. And I think when we go through the planning process, we don't consider not only those challenges, but our historical performance and how long it takes, how much it costs to actually acquire those customers. So we create these revenue goals and these revenue plans that aren't based in reality.
I think especially if it's a brand new product to market. So if it's a new entry, or versus if it's, you know, let's say it's a disruptor, a brand new market to entry. I mean, typically you're going to want several months, if not years, of changing habits, at least seeding information to the audience in order for a go-to-market strategy to be successful. So do you think that people are just starting the GTMs far too late and expecting wonderful things to happen? In other words, are they not seeding the market enough in advance for success and the revenue goal to be met?
Yes. And I think it's because when we've traditionally planned, we focused on the outcome, right?
Right.
So we've looked at a revenue projection, right? We don't consider those other elements that says, okay, I know my sales cycle is, in an enterprise business, I may have 180 to 250 day sales cycle, right? That's a very long time. I better be generating demand and opportunity for my team, you know, 6 months prior to me even starting 2024. So having that type of visibility will tell you, this is when we need to start to begin that go-to-market activity. And that's what, you know, when we have conversations with, like, we were at Pavilion CEO Summit earlier this year, and Marlin Equity Group and Insight Partners and other VCs were there talking about what they're looking for in the context of a good investment, where they're allocating their dollars. And one of those elements is product market fit. So some of the things that you were talking about is definitely takes time to achieve that product market fit. But they're looking for a minimum. If you haven't achieved product market fit yet, do you have leading indicators that will tell you that I'm on my way to product market fit, right? I have usage statistics from my products. I have, you know, consistent login from the users that are there. I've got, you know, strong, ultimately they want to see strong NRR, net revenue retention, upwards of 100%. But if I'm in my early days, I might be able to get away with 90, 95% NRR as well. So I think that kind of answers the question that you were.
It does. And I love the strategy behind defining that. How can marketers have that conversation with the CEO who expects instant gratification?
Yeah, that's a tough one. It's a tough conversation. It's not necessarily difficult to actually lay out the strategy and the plan. I think part of it is an education process, right? So when we go through the annual planning process and we have an expectation of generating revenue over a period of time, we're making a whole bunch of assumptions.
Right.
We're, you know, not only thinking about, you know, what our sales cycles are, what our offering price is, how many offerings we're bringing to market, but we're also looking at, you know, our conversion rates and what that means and how that relates to product market fit. We're also looking at revenue sources, right? So how much is going to come from net new acquisition versus expansion, upsells, you know, cross sells and ultimately retaining that existing customer base. I think you have to paint the picture of how all of that marketing activity aligns with and contributes to those revenue sources. So it's probably a roundabout answer to your question, but I think it's making sure that the marketing programs and the plans are tied to what it is that we're actually trying to achieve from a revenue goal perspective. And there's dollars allocated to it, and there's, you know, expectation of return allocated to it that we track over time.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people, I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent here, but, you know, they're establishing these goals. They're being held to meet the goals, which we should be, but the product market fit may not be perfect yet. I mean, there are all these factors that come into play regarding timing and the reality check ultimately that we need regarding that. And then, you know, enter stage left, funding is drying up and you still have funding on the table with the expectations that you need to meet these goals. I mean, it's just a plethora of ideology out there that I think is really, you know, difficult for people to understand and grasp what is needed to ultimately bring markets, good products to market.
Yeah, I absolutely 100% agree. And we're certainly seeing, it's interesting, we're seeing tighter constraints around the investments as it relates to capital, you know, coming from VCs and even the PE space. But they all still have a bunch of dry powder sitting out there, right? They're just being much more, there's a lot of capital ready to be invested. They're just holding on to it and waiting for that right investment to come along.
You know, do you think that we talk a lot on this show about the importance of strategy, the importance of data, and do you feel that those companies right now that are further along regarding the research that is needed to really determine product market fit and the data, you know, the ARR, whatever it might be, just little glimpses of hope that means something, they're more likely, you know, to get the funding than those earlier stage Series A sort of clients?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's a little bit of a shift from a heavier emphasis on, you know, there are certainly VCs out there that focus on pre-seed and seed round funding and will continue to do so. But they are still being more stringent in terms of what the requirements are to actually be a viable and valid investment for them. So in order to, even if you're earlier stage, yes, I think the capital is probably moving to later stage companies that have a better indication of product market fit and some strong NRR metrics to support that. But even if you're earlier stage, if you can demonstrate a repeatable sales process, right? You know, I have the ability to, I know how I acquire customers. I have visibility into what that process actually is. There's consistency across my team and the customer segments and how I acquire those customers. Those things are really strong indicators for people that are investing capital that you have a plan and a strategy for growth and scaling the business. And that there's early indication that your plan and strategy is working. So
what are the key strategies of really, or the core elements of creating this sustainable model that people are really aspiring to be able to achieve?
Yes, we've got a bit of a methodology around that. And we start with, you need to know where you came from. So you need to understand your history, your historical conversion rates, your sales cycles, you know, how customers have acquired your product, right? What is their preferred buying process for your specific product within a given customer segment? So that you have to start from somewhere, right? You need to start with at least some semblance of historical data and knowledge of that buying process.
And you don't have. Yeah, I was just going to say, if you don't have that data, you can take a look at industry data with or like buyer profiles to obtain it. Or quite frankly, you know, A/B test and scale is the mantra here. And that's the long way to at least being able to establish where you can be most effective.
Yep. I 100% agree. So knowing where you came from is critical. From there, we talk about revenue sources. So what's going to drive the revenue? Where is my revenue going to come from? And it's not just new customer acquisition. It's new customer acquisition. It's the retention of my existing customer base. It's the expansion of that customer base. How do those values and numbers interplay, right? Because in theory, if I want to be a $4 million business in 4 years in a SaaS world, with a high retention rate, I could just sell $1 million a year for the next 4 years. So my new sales growth is flat, right? I'm not actually growing new sales, but I'm growing the company every year up to that $4 million target. So understanding how those numbers interplay, both at a macro level and on a unit economic basis, so down to the per unit basis, is critical. But it's taking it a step further. So not only the revenue sources, but also what customer segment is it going to come from? What offering is it going to come from? What are the unique attributes of a given customer segment or an offering? I may have a mid-market play with a much faster sales cycle or an enterprise play with a much longer one and higher customer acquisition cost. So knowing what those revenue sources are across, you know, new, expansion, retention, and where that money is going to come from, offerings, customer segments, teams.
I love this because this is how marketing can best adapt. I mean, you basically just defined there the need for three different marketing approaches, right?
Absolutely.
And I think all too often what happens is marketing is forced to take a very, very broad stroke approach, typically because of funding issues. So I think that's, you know, something that really needs to be taken into consideration here. And you can still have, you know, the high level brand or awareness approaches, but going after retention is something very, very different. From a marketing standpoint, and quite frankly, sales too. I think sales becomes very, very important with retention. How do you develop a retention goal? So are you only taking a look at industry standards, or are you really taking a look at pushing the envelope a little bit and saying, I think it should be X?
So from a retention goal perspective, yes, there's industry standards out there. And if you want to be a viable investment, right, you need north of, you know, 100% NRR. You may get away with something slightly lower than that if you're an earlier stage company, but still have, you know, strong signs of product market fit. So that retention goal, these numbers interplay nicely with one another. If I want to be a $10 million business going into next year, and I'm walking into the year with $5 million worth of recurring revenue, I may have, you know, some amount of churn in there, but my NRR is still going to be strong. Those numbers interplay because if I want to be that $10 million ARR business and I'm walking into the year with $5 million with some, you know, positive NRR, but we're still taking into consideration churn, I know that I need to do $4.5 million in new sales bookings over the course of the year. So I don't think it's done in a vacuum, right? That you set right. That retention number. I think it's done based upon what you expect your growth trajectory to look like, and what's going to be the contribution of that existing recurring revenue stream over time.
How often do you feel that the teams are overshooting the plan? So, you know, they want to evaluate, they want to achieve the goal, but we've seen the aggressiveness of plans they're just so outrageous that there's no way that they're going to be achieved.
Yeah. So we, like a conversation that we had recently, right. Talking with the CRO, and he's like, look, I understand why I've been handed this revenue goal, but I don't see a mathematical path to actually,
exactly.
Hitting that number. And, you know, oftentimes we don't see that mathematical path because we don't have necessarily the availability of resources, headcount, investment dollars to drive the growth that's being expected of us. Yeah. And those things end up, and that's kind of like the next step in our kind of framework that we do is we evaluate the aggressiveness of the plan across, you know, key growth drivers. What's my deal growth look like? What's my revenue growth look like? Do I have sales cycles that are elongating or contracting? Looking across key growth drivers to evaluate whether or not that plan is actually achievable or not, and then finding ways to refine it, stress test it, say, okay, if I'm not going to, for example, right, if last year it cost me $3 million to get $1 million in new ARR, unless something dramatic is going to change and I want to do $2 million in new ARR in 2024, I'm going to have to spend $6 million. Again, unless something significant, you'll get some, you know, some scale and some benefits there from things like technology spend. But unless those sales cycles are changing, unless you're changing your pricing, you're entering a new market, you know, you're still going to have to spend the same amount to acquire a customer as you move into next year. And that's the requirement of the business. The business is telling you that. So it makes it an easier conversation when you're talking to the CEO, CFO. It's not, you know, a revenue leader saying, hey, this is me. I have to have this amount of money in order to actually hit these targets that you're telling me. It's the business that's telling us that. And it's based upon our history. And it's how we've evaluated the aggressiveness of this plan, giving us the opportunity to refine assumptions, stress test the model, and say, this is the direction we think we need to go.
Yeah, it's so interesting. We've had a lot of deals come to the table through VC and investment banking, M&A over the last several years. And my feeling is that when you've got those sort of individuals at the table, they can either make or break the company because they're so focused on the EBITDA that they're backing in everything that you've just talked about with an EBITDA goal, and which reduces spend, which reduces headcount quite often because they're trying to find efficiencies. And some of those are they need to find because a lot of times the efficiency is not there with a, you know, a founder CEO who's got a great idea but may not be, you know, the great business person as well.
But an operator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But I've seen in a couple of situations, those investment groups really destroy the growth trajectory of the company because the goals are they're not what they should be.
And I think you're going to see a bit of a shift when we talk about sustainable growth models, you know, the kind of the topic of the conversation today. It's a change both on the part of how SaaS companies are going to market,
right,
how they're spending, but it's also a kind of a shift change in expectations of, you know, the VCs that are out there that are delivering the capital. It doesn't mean that they don't have high expectations, but it does mean that, you know, looking to, you know, 100% year over year growth, the whole, you know, double-double or what is it, triple-triple, double-double-double that gets you to, you know, 35%, you know, adjusted growth over the course of that time frame and will grow you to $100 million business. I think those types of metrics are softening. It's in today's market and the expectations of growth for SaaS companies.
So how do you refine the assumptions then in this situation when you've got the head of the body saying, you know, we need you to do this, and you know that it's going to be next to impossible to achieve it? How do you have those conversations? You know, how do you bring the data to the table?
It has to be done with data. And that's the part you hit the nail on the head, right? We absolutely have to bring the data to the table. So the way we've worked with organizations to help them do that is let's lay out what our growth plan looks like. Let's take the revenue goal that we've been handed and then back into the go-to-market activity that's going to be required to actually achieve it. So looking at it from, okay, we know our history, right? The methodology we've talked about. We know our history. We know what the revenue sources are. We know what we're walking into the year with in terms of recurring revenue and our expectation of retention based upon history or at least benchmarks. We've done some refinement of our plan and we've evaluated its aggressiveness. It's surfacing where that plan is overly aggressive. And you can't do that without being able to say, here's the volume of activity required. Here's the timing of that activity. If we were to employ these go-to-market motions, it's going to cost us X to generate a lead or Y to acquire a new customer. And those things are real. So if you want this growth expectation, I either need the investment to help support it, or we need to soften that expectation or look at a shift in strategy. Do we reallocate resources to, you know, a faster moving, higher converting mid-market customer segment versus a slower moving, you know, maybe still high conversion rate, but it's a much more slow moving, higher customer acquisition cost enterprise market, right? So you start to make these informed assumptions on the trade-offs between where you're going to allocate funds. And when you start to have that type of conversation, when you're talking to CEOs, stakeholders, and investors, it's very different, right? It's not coming in and arguing with the goal. It's coming in and saying, okay, this is what it's going to take to actually achieve that goal, supported by data, supported by our repeatable sales process that we've employed. So help me figure out a way to get there.
So without tracking that performance along the way, it's going to be an incredibly difficult conversation to have.
It's crazy. The annual, just like in a microcosm of the annual planning process, right? So many organizations spend all this really good time and effort building an annual plan, and then January 1st hits and it's thrown out. And maybe we look at it maybe on a quarterly basis, or we don't look at it again for the rest of the year. So you have to continue to track. You made these assumptions on where your money was going to come from, revenue sources, offerings, customer segments. You made these assumptions on, you know, what your pricing was going to look like, what your sales cycle was going to look like, what your quota attainment for your reps was going to look like, right? So track against those assumptions and use those as early indicators, right? If we don't, like, let's look at the things that lead to revenue so that we can adjust the plan over time and keep the entire team informed. Because lots of the organizations we work with, that's how they build their OKRs, right? So they're in there saying, okay, here's my revenue plan. Here's what it's going to take to actually achieve it. Here's from a marketing perspective, you know, the objectives that we're going to go after, how we're going to spend to support it, and the results that we think we're going to actually get as a result of it.
Yeah, I love it. So what we're talking about are the core elements for that sustainable model. We've talked about, you know, understanding the historical data, what the revenue sources are, you know, the goals, the offerings, the customer segments, evaluating really, is this achievable or not, refining those assumptions, and then tracking. So let's dive into some of the challenges along the way. We've certainly brought some of those up, during this last section, but the aggressiveness of these targets, again, is something that, I think people just need to put their foot down. I mean, I guess the opposite of that is they could be not aggressive enough too. But it's really, you know, being able to find that sweet spot with all the data leading to this so that you can define exactly what it is and where you can go.
It is. And I do think probably the number one challenge is the aggressive nature of the goals still today.
Yeah.
I'm hopefully seeing a shift in that as we move later into the year and some of those expectations normalize based upon what we've seen in 2023. So I think there's opportunity there. I think it's also been a challenge for organizations historically to understand that interplay between new acquisition, retention, expansion, its contribution to overall ARR growth. Those things are kind of tough to get to in most environments, which is part of the reason we developed the methodology and the software that we did as well.
What makes it tough? Is it like human communication? Is it reporting?
Yes.
That's it.
So it is. So the data resides in different systems. There's not a common vocabulary or understanding of what each one of those. I mean, marketing may be talking to the CFO or the CEO, and there's not a common definition of what an MQL or an SQL is. There's, you know, marketing may not have, you know, the insight into what our expectations are around retention and recurring revenue. So there's definitely this communication gap because teams have traditionally operated in a more siloed environment. And marketing has its plan and its set of expectations. Sales has their plan and their set of expectations. And, you know, those don't always necessarily align with the operations coming out of the finance office or the office of the CFO.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That alignment is so key. And we can talk about it till we're blue in the face. We won't even, as you know, we do, you know, just a lot of strategy work before we get products to market. And what we have found, or solutions, services, is that typically the business objectives are not going to allow marketing and, quite frankly, sales to succeed. And just being able to understand that and isolate it and see it is half the battle.
And that's why we think that it's so critical to have for too long, this kind of process of long-range planning when we're doing multi-year planning or even just annual planning. It's broken because there isn't alignment amongst the teams. There's separate data sets that are being used. Those two things aren't talking to each other. But when you can actually bring together, you know, what the revenue growth trajectory looks like, tie that into how we go to market traditionally, what go-to-market motions we've leveraged and the cost of actually doing that, you start to have a much different conversation and alignment's a lot more, it's a lot easier to achieve because you do have a common vocabulary. Finance understands the language that marketing speaks. Marketing understands the language that finance speaks and understands things like unit economics. Mm-hmm. And there's this nice common vocabulary aligned with a common goal. And it's a utopian environment when that happens, but it's fantastic when we get close to it.
Well, it sure does. And really what you're talking about are some of the building blocks to achieving that great sustainable plan that everyone is looking for. Break down some of your additional thoughts there, if you would.
Yeah. So, you know, for too long, right, I think because revenue leaders are measured almost exclusively on their ability to hit that revenue goal, it's been a long time coming that organizations start to bring these elements together. I think that's, and that's largely the reason we created Multiply GTM, was to help organizations actually deliver a higher degree of confidence to their team in the ability to hit their number, to the investor and stakeholder community that they're a viable investment because they have a path to sustainable growth. It's the driving factor behind why we're doing everything that we're doing today.
Yeah. What is an area or a success story that you can share with us today? Just that proud papa moment that can be an inspiration to our listeners who might be in the same similar situation.
So there's one that's a fun one, and this actually was in the early days as we were just before we launched the product in the market, and we're working with one of our larger customers, chief sales officer, chief marketing officer, so peers in the organization, and we were coming into the close of Q3 at that point in time, and there was a shortfall in their forecast for Q4 for the rest of the year, right? They'd done pretty well to date, but didn't look like they were going to be able to sustain their performance as they moved into the Q4 timeframe. So in real time, in literally a 30-minute conversation, something that would have taken weeks previously to solidify, we had conversations around shifting our focus from the enterprise customer base with longer sales cycles and much higher customer acquisition costs. We couldn't generate more opportunity within the enterprise base in time to bridge that gap in the Q4 timeframe. We built a scenario in real time with them that said, okay, if we shift our focus to the mid-market, we understand what our cost to generate an MQL is. Fantastic CMO that understood her data really well. So we knew how much it was going to cost to generate an MQL in the mid-market. We knew that we had a sales cycle that was supportive of generating demand and closing that business within a quarter's time frame. And we used that process to say, okay, we need $2 million in additional funding to go and generate, you know, an opportunity of $6 million more dollars to bridge our gap before the end of Q4. Was a fantastic kind of experience and was definitely a proud papa moment to see the software do its work and genuinely add value, shave a whole bunch of time off, and support making better decisions that drive revenue as part of that process. So,
how did you go about developing the budget needed to make it happen at that stage as well?
Yeah, so that was the fun part. And that's where, I mean, transparently, the CMO that we were working with was off the charts good. She really, really understood her data. She understood fully what it took to actually generate an MQL within that mid-market base and how much they spend to actually get it to an MQL stage.
Back in the number.
So we used that MQL, but we also do the time phasing. So we knew, hey, it takes us a 75-day sales cycle. So when do we need to generate that MQL? How much are we going to have to pour in now? Do we need to dump it all in all at once? We're going to generate, you know, 1,000 MQLs, you know, in the first 3 weeks of the quarter, or do we have the time to spread it out a little bit and see and test essentially, right? If our program was actually going to work. So using the volume based upon the MQL cost and then time phasing it based upon when those leads actually needed to.
I love it. That's what marketers and quite frankly, sales teams too. We just roll up our sleeves and have so much fun problem solving, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's half of our day.
It is. It's most of my day.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I tell you, so many incredible insights today. What additional final thoughts or advice do you have for our audience today on creating that alliance between marketing and sales and revenue to really understand and create that ongoing sustainable model?
Yeah. So I think you have to rely on the data. I think it's, you won't be able to get the operations components of the organization, the office of the CFO behind you, if you're not supporting, you know, your ask with the data that tells you this is exactly what it's going to take to acquire a customer. That is a key to driving the alignment. Your CFO, your operations teams, your CEO, if he's kind of an operator CEO, will be much more appreciative of that approach and the visibility that into the data that's actually telling us that we need to get there. That creates alignment. It also creates some accountability as well, which is what they're looking for in addition. So,
Paul, I tell you, this has been fantastic. We really appreciate you sharing all these strategies with us. So many nuggets of complete and total wisdom today. We really appreciate your appearance on StrategyCast.
It was great. It was fun being here. Thank you, Lori. Loved it.
Well, thank you. What is the best way for our audience to get a hold of you?
You can reach out to me on LinkedIn. You can go to multiplygtm.com, or you can send me an email at pself@multiplygtm.com.
That's great. Thank you so much, Paul. And thank you for listening today. You can go ahead and get a hold of me at lori@strategycast.com. And don't forget to sign up for the StrategyCast newsletter as well. Thank you all.
That's a wrap. Thanks for joining us on today's show. We hope your strategic brains are spinning with new ideas and bold inspiration that will elevate your strategies and marketing know-how.